Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Brakes Plus. Let's see. Oh, all right, here we go. Mark, I already know how this is going to go. Clint Kubiak is going to be hired as the head coach, and the Broncos are going to trade for Kirk Cousins. We are going to become Vikings West. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Ooh.
And would you have a problem with that?
Would I have a problem with that? And Kirk Cousins.
What if you also
numbers?
What if you also brought in Gary as a consultant
on the kick drum? Come. It wouldn't be all bad. I don't think they're going to go that direction. I think Clint
why not? Back,
1 year as an offensive coordinator.
Well, we're all Twitter-pated about Kellen Moore and
I'm not.
Well, Mike LaFleur and. Mike McDaniels and, there's got to be a whole nother crop of Zach Taylors and Matt LaFleurs out there. Let's go get one. Why not Clint Kubiak? Why? Because he was once a ball boy here? Wasn't Kyle Shanahan a ball boy here?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Shanahan was a ball boy somewhere.
Wasn't he here? He must have been doing something.
Yeah, he was last guy.
He had to be running around doing something.
Get this.
When Mike was here.
The last guy ever to hold the cords of the head coach in the Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan. You know why? Because they went to cordless receivers the very next year.
Kind of saw that's where we were going there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he got to, what a cool job.
Right.
Hey, I need you to hold the cord so I don't trip over it during the course of the
game. Super Bowl 33.
Your job.
This cord holding job is going to lead to great things in the NFL for you. Just hold the cord. Man.
What about it? First of all, okay, let's deal with the bigger issue. How would you feel about Kirk Cousins being your quarterback?
How do you feel about steel cut oatmeal? How do you feel about scrambled eggs? How do you feel about...
Well, I love scrambled eggs.
Well, how do you feel about toast? I mean, how do you
toast? Delicious.
Yeah, it's like, it's delicious. It's good. And if that's all you have to eat, it's wonderful. But it feels like there's something.
Why? And this is an honest question.
Let me just say this. Kirk Cousins is efficient. He puts up numbers.
He's more than efficient, Mark.
I know. He just is. He does everything well, except it just feels like in critical moments,
why?
In critical games, it just doesn't. They just don't win.
I don't know why. I don't know.
If
I told you right now, you could have a quarterback. Broncos country, I'm going to give you a quarterback who midway through the season, halfway through the season, will be on pace to complete 68% of his passes, throw for 4,800 yards, 36 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. You telling me you wouldn't be like, sign me up.
Yeah.
Give it to me, right? That is the pace that Kirk Cousins is on right now.
Yes, and here's the crazy part, Mike. They have revamped their offensive line. I think they're really good up front. Christian Darrisaw, left tackle, is as a rookie, he's just being he isn't getting the recognition because of what Slater is doing with the Chargers. But he's been great since they started him. They've revamped it. They're good up front. Dalvin Cook is tremendous. They've got two really good wide receivers in Thielen and Jefferson. Their tight end Conklin is playing great football right now. And yet they still can't seem to get over the top.
Why?
Why is it that his numbers don't translate to success? Right now, he is in a span of, this is his seventh year, going back to his last 3 years as Washington, his fourth year in Minnesota. Okay? Mm-hmm. 7 years. These are his numbers. 6.5 years. 190 touchdowns to 67 interceptions.
Yeah, he's...
He's phenomenal.
Who wouldn't want... Who, but at first blush, wouldn't immediately sign up for those numbers? So, do not pass
here
go.
Here you go.
Give it to me.
Here you go. I think...
Why don't they translate?
Critical moments and critical situations and all that kind of stuff. When the game is on the line, he's going to throw it short of the sticks, punt, and hope the defense wins the game.
Can you make this quick? I got a meeting.
How about that? That could be a reason. Oh, well, here he goes.
Oh, we've already been warned.
Speaking of prima donna.
This usually comes up about 20 minutes from now, but I'm already hearing it now.
Kind of a prima donna.
Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. We got so much. Why don't you go ahead?
Joel, we've
been anticipating your reaction to this for an hour now, so go ahead, Mark.
You may have...
I wanted to throw up on Sunday.
We'll get to that. This is good stuff.
We're going to get to the good stuff first, and then we'll have the vomit session afterwards.
All right. What's up?
Okay. So, I am meeting with the world's greatest American on Saturday, Tom Brady.
I love Tom Brady too. I bet he smells amazing.
He's got his own fragrance. You know it. So anyhow, Joel.
I don't know why Mike's laughing. You know it's true.
Right.
I'm
just giddy. I'm beside myself with excitement. So I go into a big conversation of back shoulder throws and throwing guys open and accuracy and all these different things. You know, on the fade ball and this, that, and the other. So we have this just kind of intellectual conversation on the history of accuracy. And I wanted to know from his standpoint, when you get to the line of scrimmage, what percentage do you know where you're going with the ball? Is it 85? Is it 90% of the time? Is it right? And he said, hey, listen, the thing you have to understand about me is I know my weaknesses. I'm not a reactionary quarterback. I'm an anticipatory quarterback. I have to know. So he's like 90% of the time, like, I know. Now, they may get me every now and again, but I know where I want to go with the ball based on the defense that I'm looking at. And he gets into this whole conversation about 50, the back shoulder fade and people throwing 50-50 balls. And he says to me, he stops me and goes, listen, and it's not arrogant at all, Joel. Now, you may have to pull your car over right now. He said, I don't throw 50-50 balls. Is I throw 90-10 balls.
Oh
my gosh. I almost wet myself. It was so awesome.
I think, we all might need to pause and have a heater.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Woo!
Is it warm in here?
I'm a little flush.
You're right.
I'm on the air conditioning. Man, I love that. That's
90,
why he's so
10
great.
Balls. Yeah.
I love it. I love that so much. That's why he's so great. You know? Oh, man.
All right. Now that we've all had that moment.
Wait, Mike, hold on for a second. All right, now we're good.
Good.
All right. That was almost, I'll have what she's having. What did you think? You were there for that. What was your reaction when you saw Teddy Bridgewater make that business decision? And then, even better, his explanation right after.
To stay on theme. Acting!
Yes.
That's what it was. He was acting like a football player. I hated it, and I've been a Teddy defender. I've known him for a long time. He cut his teeth in college under the exact same offensive coordinator that I cut my teeth under, Sean Watson. I know how he was taught. I know what he's been about for the majority of his career, and that was not it. I think that if you got him in a quiet moment, he would be incredibly embarrassed and remorseful about that effort. I don't get that at all. Now, granted, the type of person that tends to be, you know, the blow-up clown with the sand in the bottom that just comes back for more regardless of the outcome. That's why I chased down that Miami defender only to get suplexed and thrown across the field with no chance to catch him. But that, I mean, that was just my mentality. And I think most people's mentality, if you're fair, you know, I think that the rarity is when you see a business decision like that. I can remember how Cam was vilified. Maybe the wrong word there. I mean, he was taken to the shed after the Super Bowl because of the quote unquote business decision on that fumble in Super Bowl 50, if we all remember that, right? I mean, so like, I don't get it. I don't care if it's not going to win the game for you or not. There's a level of competitive discipline. There's a level of leadership that you have to showcase in order to have any respect in the locker room. If I'm Teddy Bridgewater's teammate, why would I play hard for that? As the quarterback, you are just a notch below and sometimes above, if you're the world's greatest American, the head coach. Like, you have to understand at that position that everything that you do is either building into the mentality of your team so that they play harder for you, or it's not. There's never a middle ground. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. It's the same type of ideology, right? So that was, to me, the end of the season. That moment. I hate to lay that on Teddy Bridgewater's shoulders, but that's what I believe. That's what I feel. I understand it's a business. I understand it's the NFL, and it's one thing if it's a wide receiver who goes out of bounds or doesn't dive for the stakes or whatever, because we all just know what wide receivers are about from a general, you know, consensus. But when a quarterback does that and it's a business decision, guess what that business decision signified to me? And I think everybody in that locker room is that the season is done.
Yeah, it was one of the ugly plays. And, you know, in the bottom line, you got to move on from it. Obviously, he's apologized. He's acknowledged it here locally to the media and to everybody else, but
is it something you can't come back from though, Joel? You can't lay yourself out in front of the team and say, I'm sorry. It's unpardonable.
That is tough. Why did we love the Duke so much? Why did we all love John Elway so much? Because the guy took a pounding back in the 80s and just always was up for it. He was always ready. He was always playing what we felt like was his hardest to bring him back in the fourth quarter, and he would. I mean, you know, the helicopter play in Super Bowl 32. There's countless examples. That's why we love him. And as a quarterback, if you're not going to do that, boy, you better have a fused neck and be a Hall of Famer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that we can all be understand, like, okay, the business decision there wasn't just a business decision. It was I want to be able to walk and throw the ball with my kids later in life. And if it's not that, Mike, I don't think you can come back from it. I'm harsh in that respect, though. You got to understand, I'm the youngest of four, son of a Marine, who, you know, that Marine coached high school football for 30 years. I love to compete. I might be the wrong person to ask because I just don't think that you come back from it. Maybe in this day and age with everybody on TikTok or whatever the crap, you know, you can, but not in my estimation.
Yeah, it certainly is hard. It certainly is a bad look. The other thing that was a bad look is how you respond to success. I always say it's easy to respond to failure, but it's really hard to be a professional at times and respond to success. And the Denver Broncos under Vic Fangio have the best kind of their signature win against the Dallas Cowboys, and they come out against Philadelphia and just roll over. Is that a cultural issue? Is it a player issue, Joel, or is it a coach issue?
I think it's all of it. I think that it speaks to a lack of leadership, maybe at every level. It speaks maybe even more so to a lack of standard. I'm a big believer that the leadership in your organization, whatever organization that is an expectation holder, a standard bearer for everybody else. And the better the leadership in your group, And again, this goes outside of sports. The better the leadership in your group, the more internally you are going to hold standards and expectations. And those standards, and so when you see great teams at any level, you hear them constantly talk about, we just need to focus on us. We need to play our best football. We just need to do what our jobs. And it's because they understand that the internal standard that they hold for themselves is higher than what it will take in order to win the game. And this also, if you peel it back, if you peel the onion, you know, the layers off the onion, if you will, when you see what you've seen from the Broncos in the last couple of weeks, I feel like it's the epitome. It is the showcase of the old adage, do you love football or do you love being a football player? And when you can't handle success, it's because once you have that success, you're seeking out everything that you're doing it for, which is, you know, the praise and affirmation on the outside and seeking how cool it is. And everyone's telling me how great we are. And that's what I'm doing this for. And the real grinders, the real guys that love football, they'll dive right back into the details, hold themselves to a higher standard because they understand that their internal standard is much higher than anything else on the outside. I know that's a bunch of philosophical crap, but I truly believe that in any organization, the best organizations, they have kind of a hedgehog concept. That hedgehog concept is like an internal expectation, an internal standard, and that's what they hold themselves to. And clearly, I mean, plain as day, that is not the case with the Denver Broncos.
Visit with Joe Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. We all anticipate that Vic Fangio and the staff will be blown out to the point where they were already talking about the identity of the next Broncos coach. What do they need more right now? Do they need the young, fresh, offensive innovator, or do they need a culture builder? Do they need Kellen Moore, or do they need Dan Quinn?
They need the best coach available. I can't stand when college programs or programs, organizations in the NFL, I can't stand when they put themselves in a corner before they seek candidates. It's like the dumbest thing of all time. Like, seek the best possible candidate, period. And generally when you do that, then you get somebody pretty good. But when you're out there and you're like, well, we had the old defensive guy, so now it's got to be the young offensive guy. Then you're just riding the pendulum. I just remember, you know, any of you that have been in Denver for more than like 37 minutes will remember the old Ehlich's, right? Before it became corporate and Six Flags in downtown. I'm talking about like the old Ehlich's, which was phenomenal. I'm 40 years old, almost 40. I grew up in the Denver area, just in the Arvada area. And we used to go to Ehlich's. I used to go with my buddy all the time. And there was that dragon ride, and it would kind of like just like swing back and forth, and the tire would like swing up one way, and then you could kind of swing back the other way. It acted like a pendulum. And back then, it was like the Miller Lite commercials. It was like, less filling, tastes great. And everyone would shout like, less filling, tastes great. And it was great. And I didn't know what they were saying. I was 7 or 8 years old. Maybe it led to what my problems were in my early 20s. But we were shouting, yeah, less filling, tastes great, less filling. Well, when you're constantly pigeonholing yourself, all you're doing is you're riding the old Ehlich's dragon ride. I don't even remember what it was called. Less filling, tastes great. So rather than riding the pendulum, why wouldn't you just pull yourself away and you say, we're going to get the best possible candidate that we can. And to be fair, guys, I'm struggling finding an example of a professional organization that has top line success, that has issues, problems, drama within ownership. And so I don't know if it matters who the next coach is until the Broncos figure out this messy and ownership situation. I think that needs to get figured out before this is going to get pointed in the right direction, because I think it's very difficult, whether it's at the college level or at the pro level, for a coach to overcome poor athletic directors or presidents, or in this case, general managers and ownership.
Let me ask you, based upon, you know, the best possible candidate theory that you have, does it make sense, would you, if you were in charge, fire Vic Fangio now, you know, appoint an interim like Mike Munchak, and then start your search now? Would you fire him now, or would you just continue, you know, the debacle that is this season?
I would start my search now. I don't know if it matters. I think the only thing that firing a head coach, at least in professional sports, does, because college is so much different with the early recruiting period, and that doesn't really come into play in the NFL. So the only thing that it does is it sends off basically a flare in the locker room that basically, like, one, you're all probably not going to be here, or two, you're playing for your jobs. And that can be, I guess, beneficial at times, but I don't know if that matters as much. But behind the scenes, the coaching search should have started weeks ago, but absolutely start that process now. And to be honest with you, I'm not completely familiar with all the CBA agreements. Maybe they have to fire them in order to, like, open it up officially. I don't know exactly how that all works from a legality standpoint with the league's agreements. But if they need to do that, then they need to fire him. But if not, the coaching search needs to be started immediately.
Did I see correctly? Did Alabama move up in the rankings after beating New Mexico State?
No, they remained at two. The top seven remained the same. Was the highest ranked team that lost.
So I don't know. Shouldn't you be penalized strength of schedule if you play somebody like that? I've never understood how the SEC gives themselves a bye week late in the season and they're never ever punished for it.
Yeah, penalized for it. Well, it's really smart because in college football, it doesn't matter who you lose to, a late loss is always going to hurt you more than an early loss. And so what the SEC did is it's a few different reasons. One is they only play 8 conference games, so they've got more non-conference games to space out across the schedule. So they also saw a few years ago a void early in the year in terms of valuable inventory. And they thought to themselves, boy, we can capture the imagination and the focus of the college football landscape by putting some of our league games early in the year. And so they would start kicking off some of their league games early in the year, and you'd get the first week of the season where it's like A&M, Mississippi State, and blah, blah, blah. And I think that was like the Kenny Hill game, neither here nor there. So they spaced out their conference games across all, you know, 13 weeks of the season, if you will. So then with 4 non-conference games, every one of these schools plays a joke. And that's not all that dissimilar from other conferences either. They just do, right? That's kind of the nature of college football. Well, in most cases, they'll put that in November because they've spaced out and they can fit it in November. The SEC, more so than anybody else, what they did is that they scheduled and built their structure as a league to win championships, not necessarily run after profit, run after revenue. Whereas in other leagues, like in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, what they did is that they built their structure in order to maximize television deals so that they could share revenue right away. Well, they did that. They added a 9th conference game. They put all their conference games in kind of a 10-week stretch, which is much more difficult. So this is just one of those things that in college football, it's not the SEC's fault. It's actually very smart of them. It's like, you know, playing within the rules, but then you, after a couple of years, you realize, like, man, that's probably not great for the sentiment. Be that as it may, this is what it is.
Huh. That very interesting.
Yeah, that is. I learned something right there. I think a lot of us did. All right, who you got this week?
I've got Iowa State at Oklahoma. Not the best. We will have Ohio State, Michigan next week. So I'm hoping that the Buckeyes and Wolverines can take care of business this week.
I'm just hoping that Jim Harbaugh doesn't burn himself up on the sideline, that you get there with him. That's what I'm hoping.
I tell you, man, I'm still a little flush with the 90-10 from the World's Greatest American.
Something to just hang your hat on, Joel. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate you.
Oh, that's so good. I mean, I feel like I bring 90-10 every single Wednesday morning. You're welcome.
Oh, really quick. I'm sorry. This is at the risk of having Benny go into a conniption. One of our listeners, Tucson Tim, put together his list of the top five prima donnas at the Fan. Number five was Jimmy Marilat. Number four was Brandon Stokely. Number two was Tyler Palumbus. Number one, no surprise, was Mark Schlereth. But how about this? You, despite only being on 20 minutes a week every week, came in at number three as the third biggest prima donna on the Fan.
I'm offended.
Yeah, you don't.
No. You're offended because you're not number two or number one.
That's exactly right.
I know.
I mean, what?
Yep. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Tucson Tim. Of course he lives in Tucson. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. See you, Joel. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. All right, more Tell Me Why I'm Wrong's coming up next. Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
A lot of money for a treatment.
My man, Raj. You know, he may be a big shot program director, but still got a producer's soul.
Yes. You know?
Never forget your roots, right? So, he sent us some good stuff here that I want to get into here in a little bit. But first, as we get a chance to do every single week, Matt Moore, our Fan Nuggets insider, joins us now for his weekly visit. You can follow him at HP Basketball on Twitter. Hello, Matt. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
I'm doing great, Matt. I mean, it's awesome day here in Denver. No question about it. We had some snow flurries, so that's always a good start. So in regards to the I'm ready for winter. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm
kind of ready for winter.
Let's go.
But in regards to the Nuggets, kind of, how do you see this whole thing playing out right now with Michael Porter Jr.? Do you think he's going to fit in a little better? I know he's had the back issue. How concerned are you about the development of him? And obviously we need him, or the Nuggets need him to step up his game. So where are you with that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think health-wise should get an update in the next coming days. Right now there's no expectation he's going to miss a significant amount of time. They're still looking at treatment and trying to get him to where he's feeling better. Right now, I'd say that it feels like probably next week. There's always the possibility of a test or a consultation going differently. But right now, I think next week is probably when he'll be back. Look, I think this team had the same stuff that go on last year, where he started off and was really rough. Clearly, the back was bothering him earlier this season as well. Hopefully a couple of days off will get him to where he feels better, is able to come back and then be a little bit closer to what he was last season. The Nuggets have figured out some stuff with their rotation. They're playing better. But, you know, MPJ is going to have to find a shot first and foremost. If he's hitting shots, he can deal with all the clunkiness around everything else. His defensive effort's been fine this year, but he's going to have to find a shot. And if that's still missing, it's still going to be a little bit awkward because he takes up a lot of possessions on shots that they're not going in. Don't necessarily fit in the flow of the offense. It's going to be a work in progress, I think, for a while.
Matt, follow me on this, okay? Nikola Jokic is putting up numbers from a center that are mind-boggling, that are all-time great, that favor with and are blowing past some of the all-time greats that we've watched over the years play this game. Is there anything that you can point to sort of poke any holes in what Jokic is doing right now in terms of where he fits and ranks all time? Is there any way you can, I guess, play devil's advocate and poke some holes in it?
I mean, look, usually when we have guys that put up stats, the hit is, okay, sure, puts up numbers in the regular season, but what happens come playoff time? James Harden, I think, was in that conversation. And still kind of continues to be, even though he's made a Western Conference Finals twice, actually. But, look, Jokic is kind of playoff certified. Like, he's come in and won the playoffs. I think maybe the only thing that you can kind of poke holes in is, one, the era in terms of everybody puts up elite numbers nowadays. Like the offenses are just so much more efficient that that helps produce all these big numbers. I think that's part of it. Usually defense is the hit, but he's been great on that end this year. I think maybe the only thing that you can really look to is he doesn't take over games for long stretches. Or when he does, it doesn't feel like when Steph Curry hits four threes or LeBron, takes over and hits four dunks. It's always been about kind of like how it feels to watch Jokic versus what actually happens. If you break that down, Jokic has been as good as anybody.
It's a great debate to have, the what if debate, but if he had to play in a time in which he was going up against Shaq, Akeem, David Robinson, who else do I want to talk about? You know what I'm talking about. Akeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson,
the big guys.
Shaq, guys like that. Yeah, he would be able to present some issues to them, but they'd obviously be able to present issues to him. How do you think he would hold up in that group?
I mean, I think you can look back. I think there are centers that he was a little bit comparable to, but nobody really passed like him. I do think, like, look, Shaq bodied everybody. Like, Shaq just bodied everybody. Huge dudes got backed into oblivion by Shaq. Hakeem Olajuwon, who I think is, in my opinion, is the best center of all time. Like,
I agree
that fadeaway, like, Jokic isn't doing anything versus him. Like Hakeem's dropping 40 on him and probably blocking a shot a bunch. But I do think that when you throw in the passing, I don't necessarily know that he can translate as well to the 90s. I think he'd still be really good. I don't know that he'd be as good because of where the game is at with spacing. But I also think if you put, David Robinson in today's game, that gets a little bit tougher. I'm of the opinion Shaq dominates no matter when, because I saw Shaq just body everybody. But I do think that Jokic would be good. I think it would be not as good because of the efficiency of where the game is at and the physicality. But I do think that he's proven he can body in the post. He is tough. He is mentally resilient. He does have go-to moves. I do think he would not be a bust back in the 90s, but it would be different. Just as it would be different with those guys in today's game.
Just got really something really quick. The 30 seconds or so. A lot of people on this station, a lot of people that text us, are not big Michael Malone fans. They don't think he's doing a great job. Where are you on Michael Malone?
They've gone over their projected win total from Vegas every single year. They've gone further every year except last year. He's dealt with injuries. He's dealt with all sorts of things. He's dealt with, roster upheaval. He's built the culture. I can't understand why there's not a feeling this. He's won playoff series. It'd be one thing if he had the problems they used to have, but he's won playoff series. I think Michael Malone's been a coach of the year candidate the last 3 years. I think he'll be another one this year.
All right. Matt, great stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Moore, our Fan Nuggets insider. You can hear him as part of all of our coverage all season long with our Nuggets postgame show, heard after each and every game, all games, regular season, postseason, weekdays, weekends, all part of our commitment to bring you the best and most Nuggets content on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan. Nuggets back to work tomorrow night. So Avalanche in action tonight at Vancouver. You'll be able to hear the Avalanche postgame show right after the final horn tonight. Coming up next, I give the afternoon guys credit. They really got into a good discussion about names and what kind of coach should the Broncos be looking for when inevitably they move on from Vic Fangio and this staff. Our man Raj Sharon has actually made the question a lot easier to answer. Tell you why. Coming up next, Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. Once a producer, always a producer. Doesn't matter how big a shot you become. Our program director, Raj Sharon, grinding. Digging. Yes. So we've got this debate, and it's only going to pick up when, inevitably, Vic Fangio and this coaching staff gets blown out. It's going to happen, right?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. So, never too early to start speculating about who could be the next head coach and start tossing out names. Afternoon Drive did a great job of doing that yesterday.
What names did they come up with?
Well, they talked about guys like Dan Quinn and Doug Peterson. Oh, okay. I mean, the usual suspects, right?
All right, yeah.
But the debate about do you go with a so-called retread, which has a negative connotation to it right away.
Correct.
Or the fresh, young, hot thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just something for you to chew on.
Yeah.
All three Broncos Super Bowl titles were won by head coaches on their second job. Hmm. The winningest coach in team history was on his second job, John Fox.
John Fox percentage. Is the percentage.
Yeah. Recent Bronco head coaches on their first job were failures. McDaniels, VJ, Fangio. This century, 15 of the 22 Super Bowl championships were won by head coaches on their second job. From Bill Belichick to Andy Reid to Bruce Arians to Gary Kubiak to Pete Carroll to Tom Coughlin to Tony Dungy to John Gruden to Dick Vermeil. So, armed with that information, those facts, does that change or influence you at all when it comes to what kind of coach you would want moving forward?
No, it doesn't really change my thought process because I've always been a fan of guys that have done it before because you learn during your first tenure the mistakes and the things you don't want to repeat again. At least you should. I think being a head coach, one, is I think a lot of guys have a tough time letting go of coaching on a day-to-day basis. So they still want to do, like, they don't see the forest through the trees. They're too involved. Whereas it was always explained to me, and I believe this to be true, your head coach's job is to coach the coaches. And I think it's hard to let go of some of that connectivity you have with players because they energize a lot of guys. That's why there's some guys that are just really good coordinators and never, ever make it as head coaches because they just can't transition into what the head coach's job is. And so I've always thought that you should learn a lot of things during your first stint as a head coach. And sometimes it takes getting fired before you can step back and look at the totality, look at it from a global perspective and say, these are really good things I did. These things need to change.
What do you think the one common theme, all those coaches that I just mentioned that were very successful their second time around, what do you think would be the common theme that they would all agree upon? This is what made me a better coach the second time around.
I just think that you understand the responsibilities. You understand what the job is. And I think it really is, again, I think it's a really hard thing, especially for some of these coordinators, to let go of some of that. Like, look at Vic Fangio. He can't let go of calling plays. I mean, you get one signature win and you know, you develop the game plan that destroyed the Dallas Cowboys single-handedly. You can't let go. And so much so that you don't, you know, perception, and this is just, the view from the outside, so much so that you don't have, you just give total autonomy to the offensive coaches and you don't, two weeks ago was the first time you said, hey man, let me dig into special teams and let me dig into the offensive coaches. You've been so clouded by, you know, calling defenses that you haven't done that.
But is that changing? Is the idea of you want the experience, is that changing? Can you make an argument that some of these first time coaches now are figuring it out quicker, better? I mean, let's look at the winning teams right now in the NFL. McVay, first time head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Kingsbury, first time head coach. Peyton's been with the Saints forever, but that's his first
correct
job as head coach. Who else we got? McCarthy, he's a retread.
LaFleur,
first time head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Vrabel, first time head coach. Harbaugh, this is his first time as a head coach.
Correct.
Tomlin, first time as a head coach. Heck, if you want to talk about, Buffalo, McDermott, first time as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these are all successful coaches. But I guess in the new crop that we're talking about, the McDermotts, the LaFleurs and stuff, then I guess it comes down to what do you ultimately want from your head coach? Is it about being a winning team, or is it ultimately about winning Super Bowls? I brought up the stats about Super Bowls and...
Would you say 15 of the last 22?
Right. Second time. I would think ultimately, which is kind of funny here, because it seems like we talk about the idea of what we want from a franchise quarterback, and something tells me that what might pass for a successful franchise quarterback in some places, that if you took that same record and applied it here, people in a very short time would say, yeah, that's good. I'm glad you're winning all these regular season games, but when are you going to deliver a Super Bowl?
Right. I think something else about those first-time head coaches. Now, not all of them, but, you know, LaFleur rolls into a situation where he's got Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, McDermott, they were a playoff team with Tyrod Taylor, but they found themselves Josh Allen. Makes it a little bit more palatable, if you will.
Coach, did Josh Allen... Oh, I'm sorry.
So cute. Anyhow, I think there is... obviously, there's value in experience.
But should you be looking for the next Bruce Arians? Bill Belichick? Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, John Fox, or you should be looking for the next McDermott, LaFleur, McVay, Vrabel, that type.
I don't think this is a right answer, Mike. I think you have to know when you know. It's like, what is it? I don't know, but I'll know it when I see it. You know the McVay, you want to know how the McVay thing went down? The McVay thing went down because Les Snead, their GM, had heard nothing but great things about him. And he interviewed him just because he thought he might be a candidate down in the future. He wasn't ready yet. He was 30 years old or 31 or whatever it was. So he brings him into the building and McVay blows him away. And he's like, and he interviewed candidates and he's just like, oh my God. I can't let him out of the building. And he goes, yeah, he's probably, you know, there's going to be a learning curve and he's really young and that's going to be something he's going to have to overcome. But he is so dynamic a personality and he's so smart a football coach. I can't let him walk. So he said he knew that dude has it. Now how Washington didn't know, they had McVay, Shanahan and LaFleur on the staff. Under Mike. Where's Jay Gruden? Bring on Jay Gruden. Talks funny, just like his brother. He's gotta be successful. I mean,
Jay Gruden could be a retread coach too. Bring him back.
It just is, it's interesting.
The good news is, I think we're gonna have plenty of time to debate this.
Yes.
Because that's, there will be a coaching search going on at Dove Valley, and we'll get to, do that again. We've gotten pretty good at these coaching searches, haven't we, over the last, several years.
Well, we've had lots of searches. I don't know that we're good at it.
Well, no. We.
Oh, you and I?
Well, us, the station, the fans. Oh, yeah. We're very experienced at this. We're good at this. The Broncos, not so much.
Correct.
Correct. Tell me why I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong. Ding, ding, ding. We got a winner right at the end there. Okay, we are done. Thank you, everybody, to your great texts. Appreciate it all. And
we had one legitimate winner today.
We had one and a half. Yeah.
No, you can't go horseradish. You're giving half to horseradish?
I'm giving half to horseradish. Yep.
We had one.
Yep, one and a half.
Let's not soil the texter's victory. Let him stand alone. Let's start awarding half points.
Look at you. I like
stand alone and enjoy Thanksgiving at the adult table. Congratulations.
Okay. There you go. All right, we're done. Chad and Nate coming your way next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.